Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining me here today. I'm Mandy Rosniak of Inner Winning Coaching, and we are here with you. We're going to be talking about some good stuff today. Today, joining me, I'm going to be having Ben Powers with me. We're going to be talking about some good stuff, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But just to let you know a little bit about myself and what we've got going on here today, I am here with you on the first and third Friday of the month at noon. And I like to talk about the different things that are go beyond the skills and drills of sports. I like getting into the topics that help make up the athlete more than just what it is that they do in regards to their performance aspects, because it's that stuff that goes on inside our brains that really, really make up who we are and how we are. So very excited to have you join us here today. And I'd like to just let you know, if you would like to call in or if you had any questions or comments, you can do so. And the number is 646-716-9397. And you can also, if you call in and you just want to listen, you can do that as well. Again, the number is 646-716-9397. And as I said, I'm Mandy Rosniak of Inner Winning Coaching. And if you'd like some more information on myself, you can find information at my website, which is coachmandy.com. Or if you'd like to email me, you can do that it's mandy@coachmandy.com. I'm also on Facebook, and my page is Inner Winning Coaching. Or I have a Twitter account, and it's @LifeCoachMandy. So, again, thank you for joining me here today. Just to tell you a little bit about the work that I do, I primarily work with athletes. I also work with people who are going through life transitions. But the work that I do with athletes is really helping them find and release their inner greatness so that they can perform to their best both on and off the field. Because as we know, anybody who's done any kind of athletic endeavors, it's usually not the skill sets that hold us back sometimes. It's that thought process, it's anxiety over what we're about to do, it's being a little bit stressed out about the situation that might be coming up. Maybe our confidence isn't quite where we want it to be. So it's the stuff that's going on behind the scenes that usually affects our performance. So that's a lot of the work that I do and love working with athletes to help them excel both on and off the field and help them perform at their best so they can ignite their inner greatness. And just to tell you a little bit how I have gotten to know Ben, haven't had a chance to personally meet him yet, but Ben and I have been connected because we're both part of this brand new program through IPAC, which is the coaching school that we both have come through. And we're very, very excited to be in the inaugural group that's going through this program that is going to be allowing us to get out there very, very soon to work with the public. And it's called the Core Performance Dynamics Program. And basically what that stands for, Core stands for the heart of or most essential part. The E in Core stands for our energy. And then Performance is about your level of mastery in your sport. And then the dynamics aspect is the connection and interplay between the inner and outer forces that determine our success. So it's a complete system that gets to the core of what creates top performance in both sports and life. So some of the things that it's going to look at is, you know, who do you ideally want to be? How do you want to play? What you want from your game? And this program helps you devise a plan to achieve everything that you're going to desire both on and off the field, because it's a fundamental system for living, and it helps provide that roadmap so you can, like, master whatever it is you're trying to do. So we're very excited to be a part of this, and like I said, that is how Ben and I have been connected. And what's really, really great about this program is everybody in it comes from all different walks of life. We're actually an international group. We've got people in the United States, spread out into Canada, and we all have sports and athletic backgrounds, so it's a great, great group of people who are bringing together all our experiences, both as athletes and now as coaches, to be able to help athletes get out there and perform their best. So that's how I've come to know Ben, and very excited to talk to him today. So to tell you a little bit about Ben, I'm going to give you a little bit of his bio, and then I'm going to introduce him so he can fill in the gaps. Ben grew up in Middlebury, Vermont, and he loved playing youth and high school baseball, soccer, lacrosse, and I guess, of course, in Vermont, you have to ski, so he did skiing as well. He has a bachelor's degree in psychology from the University of New Hampshire. He was a captain of his college lacrosse team. And then after that, he worked in Boston for 5 years selling investment products, and he taught sailing part-time. And then after that, he traveled and raced sailboats at the pro level for 3 years, spent time in the Caribbean, Europe, Middle East, and both U.S. coasts. He sailed across the Indian Ocean and also won a transatlantic race. He has his own custom woodworking business, and he got started in his coaching practice in 2013 so he could help young people with their professional goals. And now he also works with young athletes on their performance. And he likes to basically look at his clients or student-athletes and young professionals who thrive on excellence, personality, athletically, academically, and professionally. And his website is powerscoaching.com. And he's also a very, very busy guy here. He also started a prepared food business making an absolutely delicious organic and gluten-free lasagna called HeartToHearthVermont.com. And I'm sure we're going to get into talking a little bit about that. Like I said, he's obviously a very busy guy, very driven. And what we're going to be talking about today is how athletics plays a role in our success and to a lot of what has helped form who he is and how he's come to do a lot of what he's done. So in all that, I'd like to bring Ben on and have him give you a little bit more background on himself and let you know how you could reach him and get in contact with him. So, Ben, welcome to the show today.
Well, thank you, Mandy. It's a pleasure to be on, and I appreciate the warm welcome and the intro. That's very comprehensive of my background, and, yes, that's exactly what makes up my day-to-day these days is a lot of different interests and pursuits, but it's all based on kind of the same theme of performing well and being efficient and also very present in the projects that I work on and making a difference for other people as well, bringing people together, forming community, and having people get a taste of doing the best and being the best that they can be. And that's really my top value for myself and for those around me.
And how can people get in touch with you after the show today, and what's the best way to reach you?
Well, you mentioned my website, and that's powerscoaching.com. And my email is ben@powerscoaching.com. And you can find my LinkedIn profile and phone number in that email as well through my website. So that's the best way.
Nice. And again, welcome today. And like I said, I'm very excited to have you. I know we talked a little bit the other day, and we find out it's such a small world because Ben has met someone that I went to through the IPEC coaching program with. So it's such a interesting thing when you know, that 6 degrees of separation. So I'm excited to get started here today. So in diving right in, how did you get started in sports, you know, when you were young, you know, and started playing?
Well, growing up in Vermont, we didn't have a whole lot to do except for play sports. We were the kind of family that had, you know, a TV antenna up on the top of the house, and every time the wind blew, the stations would go out. So TV wasn't really an option, nor were video games or any electronics. And this is, again, back in the 80s, so there was very little internet and social media use. And so we gravitated towards the backyard, putting our sawhorses out there as soccer goals. We'd throw a board out on the ground and use that and a fence post in the corner of the barn as our bases. And we'd play baseball in school. Little League was the big thing. All the boys in my school played Little League. We had literally a one-room schoolhouse situation, and so it was a very small town, but everybody looked up to the older kids who played baseball, and that was just what you did. And I was the middle of three boys, and we all kind of marched through our classes and our years in elementary school playing baseball and roughhousing at home, and, of course, a little bit of brotherly stitches and knocking each other's teeth out and roughhousing along the way, but sports were a very big part of that as well, and it was a big part of getting involved with our fellow students in elementary school and just getting involved in the community and making friends.
Well, it's funny because when you just said about the rough housing and knocking teeth out, I quickly, you know, again, noticed that, and that's not from playing hockey. That's just from having brothers.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I noticed that, so in this total side question here, but was the sport that you played just more prevalent in your area versus hockey? Because, you know, again, that's probably a very big stereotype of, you know, if you're in Vermont, you're probably playing, like I said, skiing or you're doing the hockey. Was hockey just something you guys didn't have in that area or just maybe not something that came of interest?
No, that's a good question. Actually, youth hockey is pretty big here, as you'd imagine. A lot of kids play as very young guys and girls. I think difference for us was that youth hockey, as many people know who've played it, is a big commitment. It involves getting up at 4 or 5 in the morning and traveling long distances and playing year-round. And we just never kind of got off in that direction as kids. We always liked the slightly less organized and, you know, less of a commitment type sports, baseball and soccer. And it was funny, too. I never got into playing football either as a kid. I think I've always thought there was something about having just a lot of equipment on that didn't go with me. I think playing lacrosse was about the most that I ever did in terms of needing equipment. So hockey and football just weren't my thing.
And one of the things you said when you were talking about how you got started into it, which I think sign is very interesting because I, know from talking to you and just look at some of your stuff, you know, the fact that you said you had the antenna on the roof goes to show you're a little bit older, but you're not that old of a guy. And the fact that, you know, you grew up playing with the side of the barn at a base or, you threw down the cover of something, feels like nowadays with youth sports and it's the work that you're venturing into, that seems to be a missing piece. There seems to be that missing link. Everything now becomes really, really organized and, everything is you have to have field space and very few kids now understand the invisible man on second base mm-hmm. aspect and things like that. How do you
yep.
feel that playing that freelance and having to be creative and those things helped you as an athlete?
Well, I think that was a big piece of my growing up. There was that kind of sense of rebellion that organization was a little bit to be laughed at. And we would go to our practices, obviously, and play in our games and do as well as we could. But anything that was over the top was not really our thing. We loved to go to baseball practice after school, but, you know, we were out in the country, so we were always picking grass and looking off into the next field, and anything too strict, too rigid was, you know, just didn't really fly. But I think it was just that the love of that simple aspect of the game where we could go out and just play in our backyard, and that, like you say, the invisible man, that was a big thing because we'd always be, you know, we could play baseball one-on-one or two-on-two and have a team of six invisible guys on each team, and we'd be making forced plays and batting these invisible players around the bases. But it was so much fun because I think that imaginary part of the game and the fun of not being organized and having it be just that is play was the big part. That was the big draw. It wasn't something that our parents made us do. We didn't have to go to sports camps. That happened occasionally, but it wasn't the predominant theme of my youth playing sports. It was always primarily a voluntary thing that I got excited about, and it was play. You know, we played sports. We didn't work at it like we saw some of our friends who played hockey and some of the other sports where it was a full-on commitment, and making a certain team was a parental expectation or requirement, and we were just kind of turned loose on it, and we did it as something that was fun that we really loved and enjoyed.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate too, because it seems like nowadays, you know, there's that sense of it fosters creativity, imagination, conflict resolution. You know, like you said, you'd have a team of six invisible guys, and you could do a force play. And of course, I'm sure there was a few times when somebody would argue that, well, no, the guy wasn't on first; he was on second, so it wasn't a force play. And it, you know, forces you to have to do conflict resolution, like I said, creativity, and coming up with things, you know, on your own. And it just seems like now, since everything is so structured, a lot of kids have lost sort of that basis for, you know, making things up on the fly. And if it's not being instructed to them, or they're not being dictated to, you know, go here and do this now, go there and do that, they almost don't know how to just have fun within the game. I know I see that with some of the youth that I'm working with. It's that when there's that few minutes downtime, they don't know to just, you know, a lot of them don't know what pepper is anymore with baseball, or they don't do things on their own until they're instructed to do something. And I feel like that's sort of one of the things that's getting lost a little bit in this structure of today's world of sports. You know, and again, it sounds like from, you know, you grew up being able to experience that aspect, and I'm sure it benefited you as an athlete.
For sure. I think that aspect of conflict and learning how to win and lose, you know, they always say win with humility, lose with grace, and I remember seeing T-shirts that said that from our local high school when we were kids, and that was a big deal. And I think those lessons carry over into every part of life, and having experienced some really exciting and triumphant wins both in youth sports and then later on in life, and also some just heartbreaking losses at the time, it's pretty tough, but I think those are just invaluable lessons, and not that they don't come with their share of black eyes and knocked out teeth when you're a kid. You know, it's frustrating and it's a tough way to learn sometimes, but those lessons are just absolutely invaluable, and I wouldn't have it any other way. The way I grew up and played sports in that level and with that sense of joy, and that's what we wanted to do. I wouldn't do it any other way.
Yeah, and it sounds like with a lot of those experiences, it probably, as we'll be getting into, helped you develop your ability to pursue different interests and have sort of like that foundation and that background to, you know, be able to venture out on your own and take some chances, because that's kind of what you did as a kid playing sports, and you didn't come from a overly structured, you know, everything has to be ABC, you know, on the field. And like I said, as we get into some more stuff here, I'm sure that helped influence that aspect, or, you know, helped you pursue some of these things that you've done in your life so far. So when you end up going to college, how much of an influence was playing lacrosse at the school you chose?
It was huge. I think the appeal of UNH having as many clubs and sports teams and different interest groups was a big draw for me. It's a state school. It's a beautiful campus. It's near the ocean, a lot of really nice things about it. But I think the diversity of what you could learn in the classroom, but also what was going on all over campus and beyond 24 hours a day, was a big deal. I knew that getting involved in sports as a young kid and in middle school and high school was such a key element in my ability to learn those valuable lessons and learn about community and how to socialize and make good friends and just satisfy my need to fulfill my interests and play and work hard and keep learning. That was a big aspect, and I found all of that at UNH.
And was playing in college something you always wanted to do, or was it also like a case you got there and then said, hey, yeah, I definitely want to play? How did that come about for you?
Well, I played lacrosse in high school. I was kind of a late starter compared to most of my friends. I started my freshman year of high school, whereas a lot of my buddies started in fifth or sixth grade. So I had some catching up to do, but I did love it a lot. It was a lot of fun. We had a great team in high school and learned a lot really fast. Our team in college was actually a varsity program until the year that I got there, and then we had some funding cuts and we became a club team. But I was fortunate enough to have a lot of the guys left who were drafted and recruited to play college lacrosse. So it was, you know, we were playing a D1 level schedule and program, and, you know, it wasn't something at all that I had anticipated I would do. I didn't get a scholarship, and, you know, having started later, it wasn't even on my radar to do after high school. But I got this opportunity and went out and played and ended up being a pretty good player, ended up being the captain of my senior year. So it was kind of a surprise opportunity and something that was really a big part of my college experience. I think college sports are an amazing thing where very young people go out and can obtain a tremendous amount of power and influence. And it's, again, at the same time as your first venture out into the world alone without your parents right there next to you. And you take all these lessons you learned in high school and junior high about building a community and being a good leader. And, you know, again, a lot of times you're still just a kid, 17, 18 years old, but you have a taste of what you can do and what your power is and what your potential is, and it's just an amazing thing, especially at schools where you see kids go out and play in front of 80 or 100,000 people on a football field. It's a pretty incredible thing. You're almost launched from this small town football or lacrosse field onto the pro level, essentially, in terms of the audience that you're in front of. And if you're prepared for that, you can excel. And either way, you learn a ton.
Well, and that's just a great, great segue into the next question I actually had for you was, you know, what was something you remember from your experience of playing in college that impacted you in some way that, you know, you've taken it with you off the field now?
Well, I think just having that approach to the game where I always knew that I hadn't had as much experience as all the guys around me, and I was a latecomer to the game, but I really liked it, and I liked the sense of the team and community, and I loved being a leader as I got older in college. And there was just something about being kind of an underdog that really appealed to me, and I worked really hard. I tried to catch up. I tried to be good at throwing and catching with my left hand and my right hand and figure out ways that some of the other guys, even though they had more experience, were maybe lacking in, so that I could get back and catch up to their level. And I just remember a few times having a sense of just being totally in the zone, being totally focused and scoring a few goals at a time in a game, you know, within a few minutes, and making a diving shot from behind the net, or just something that I would really surprise myself, and the guys around me, my teammates, would be surprised too. Now, they knew I was a pretty decent player, but I was never an all-star or the biggest or the fastest or, you know, the best stick handler, but I once in a while had these moments of greatness, and it was something that I really surprised me, and I knew I was putting a lot of effort in, but I didn't expect that. And so it was just a taste of something that I knew I wanted, and I knew that if I continued to take risks like that, like go out and play, even though I didn't have all the experience of most of the guys, that I could surprise myself. I could surprise people around me. I could do things that even I didn't think was possible. And that theme is something that I've really taken as a valuable lesson and experience, and it's kind of the core of what you mentioned earlier with the core performance dynamics program that we're trying to get at, is to help people get to that fullest potential that they have. And once they get there and comfortable with it, see if they can even push that limit to something that they didn't believe was possible, because I know I've done it. And so I just relish the opportunity to help other people get there as well, especially young athletes in high school and college.
You know, and as you're talking, I and listening to you know, what you've been saying about some of your experiences, I can't help but think there just seems to be this resonating piece that I'm hearing that did with sort of, you know, not being sort of thrust into the high, you know, the high level of organized sport at that early age and superstructured aspects that, you know, as you said, you got started in lacrosse, you know, a little bit later than other people, that actually almost has led you to sort of have a different sense of drive, a different sense of purpose and accomplishment from yourself versus where sometimes you see kids who, you know, get started in that superstructured real early, almost get into, and I think you already said this, but almost get into where it becomes like work. It becomes sort of where they almost go through the motions versus where for you, you're always looking to sort of push yourself, prove to yourself things that you could do that you didn't even know you could do. And you came to that place more so not because it was any expectation put on you, but just because you just love to play. You found ways to challenge yourselves, and you were always kind of maybe exposing yourself to new ways of doing things because there was like sort of that passion and love and free form sort of still within you because it wasn't kind of pushed down, you know, inside you, which I think happens sometimes to today's youth. Does that sort of resonate with you at all? Because like I said, as I'm listening to you talk, I kind of just feel this sense of you just have this greater sense of freedom and follow your, like, hey, what can I do today to become even better kind of person?
Yeah, definitely. It's been a big theme is being brave and taking a risk, throwing myself into the most challenging situation I can imagine. I think as a college student and being an introvert was always a challenge for me to go out and be social and be a leader on my lacrosse team. But those were things that I pushed myself to do, and I ended up being very successful in meeting people and making a great community of friends that I still have, and having a successful season as a lacrosse captain. And it's a theme that I took with me after school. I did some traveling right away, went to South America, and came home and said, okay, now what's the hardest thing I could do? Again, as an introvert, move to the city and get a job selling financial products, investments in mutual funds and insurance. And for some reason, I just wanted to have a taste of that, and I knew it was going to be the hardest thing that I could possibly do based on my personality and being an introvert and being not someone who enjoys thoroughly being on stage all the time and being the center of attention. But I pushed myself to do that, and I, again, learned a lot and learned some great lessons, and I think that leads me to the point where I am today where, you know, being live on a radio show and taking other people along in stride and trying to show them a little taste of what it's like when you put yourself out there and you get those big rewards, even if it's not very often, it's so worth it. And it's just, for me, it's just the essence of why we're all here and what the point of living is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like the piece you just put in there about that, you know, that essence, because that's, I think, what I was alluding to is there was that essence about how you came about pursuing some of the things you did that it was really, really authentic place versus, again, someone who just was, you know, kind of pushed through a system or pushed through the, you know, the ranks of how some of the youth sports dynamics are set up today, but that it kept you with a hunger and a drive and what can I pursue today or pursue, you know, next, that could challenge myself, that maybe was there for you because, again, you weren't, you weren't in this, like, put in this box at an early age and said, here, you go do this way for this amount of time,
mm-hmm.
for sure. And actually, in 1 minute, we'll get into that piece about the post-college thing, because that was actually going to be one of my questions to get into. How do you get you know, get a degree in psychology and then go into, you know, the banking world, like, or the securities world like that. But in just a minute here, because I have to do a little bit of promo for some of the other shows coming up, because it is that thing we do here on the radio. So just to let you know, stuff coming up in the Life Coach Radio Network. We have on Sunday, May 18th at 9 p.m., we have Mark My Words with Certified Life and Business Coach Mark Shaw, and that's Sunday, May 18th at 9. On Tuesday, May 20th at 8 p.m., we have New You City Chat with host Danielle Curio. On Thursday, May 22nd at noon, Walk Your Talk with Leanne. And then on the Life Coach Chat channel, one of our sister channels, we have Transform Your Life, If You Dare. Yes, that's Transform Your Life, If You Dare. My apologies, Transform Your Life. I'm sorry, it was a typo. Transform Your Life, If You Dare, with Life Coach Tamara Domino Theory. And then that will be Sunday, May 18th at 2 p.m. And then on the International Life Coach Radio Network, we have on Monday, May 19th at 2 p.m., Holy Shift with professional coaches Barb Hennen and Leslie Pichetti. So those are the shows coming up there. And I'm chuckling at myself because I'm looking at it and I'm like, Transform Your Life, that doesn't sound right. And then I realized the T got chopped off. So I apologize for that. But the fun pieces of when you are going live here. So, you know, again, you talking about the fact that you had a BA in psychology. And, you know, after that you went and worked, you know, selling investment products. But you also, you know, were teaching sailing part-time. And you've already spoke to a little bit about the why you got into the selling investments, because it was something you could challenge yourself. And then the sailing piece comes in there. So how does a kid from, you know, who grew up in landlocked Vermont, you know, minus Lake Champlain there, but get into sailing in general, but then moved on to professional, you know, race sailing and then travel the world for 3 years?
Well, it's a great question, and people ask me that all the time. And I think it just comes back to that same sense of play and adventure that was so present for me as a kid. My parents loved to go out and take us on trips to lakes and mountains and rivers around Vermont and around New England. And when we were kids, we would go sail on Lake Champlain pretty much every weekend in the summer. And my parents had been introduced to sailing by some of their friends who sailed, and they very fearlessly took us along for the ride as they learned to sail, and we spent our weekends on the lake, and then later we moved on to the islands off of Maine and Massachusetts, Nantucket and a vineyard, and some years ago we actually drove the boat down to Key West and sailed across to Cuba and had an amazing adventure there. And I think it was just, you know, it wasn't necessarily about the sailing as much as seeing new things and taking risks and putting ourselves out there that we loved so much. And the boating obviously is a fantastic way to spend time, be on the water fishing and sailing and out in the sun. And I think that's obviously a beautiful perk, but the theme is about adventure and risk and how exciting it is to be alive. You know, you read a lot about the adventures of people who climb mountains and sail across oceans, and I think that's really it, is feeling what it's like to be out there and be scared once in a while and see some amazing things that you'd never see on TV or even in a book.
Now, with the racing sailing that you did, now, were you still doing your work in Boston, or did you do that simultaneously, or did you just go and do the sailing for that time period?
No, I was teaching sailing in Boston part-time while I was working in finance downtown. And basically, again, the goal of working in an office in a suit and tie was to see if I could do it. And I put a number goal down on paper, and basically as soon as I hit that, I said, okay, I'm out of here. That was, you know, that was enough for me, even though I could have stayed and probably had a very good career. But it wasn't about that. It wasn't about making money or meeting a certain number of people. It was just about seeing if I could hit that goal. And once I did, the next goal was, let's do something completely different and, again, just as difficult. which is to sail full time and travel and race against guys who are pros and basically live that life, because there's no charted way to do that. There's no school to go to be a pro sailor, and there's no documented path. So I basically had to make it up and do a lot of networking and traveling and put myself out there and work hard and basically make it into a job, essentially, to study the craft and get as good as I could at it. And so that's what I did for 3 or 4 years, just, you know, be available and interested and learn everything I possibly could and be willing to go anywhere at a moment's notice. And once I got there, be present and into what I was doing and fully focused and just, you know, live the experience as much as I possibly could.
So I know it says here that you went to, you know, you all over the world, obviously, in different places. Where were some of the most challenging places that you ended up to do racing, both the racing aspect and then maybe also where you were, you know, environmentally or culturally?
Far the most different place I ever went to was Oman for an event a couple of years ago. And I've been to a lot of places, Australia, New Zealand, Europe, South Africa, the Indian Ocean, and you always get a sense that you are in a different land than your home and that there's different people here and you're having a great experience. But the Middle East for me was literally like going to another planet. It was just such a different world from, you know, growing up in Vermont. The different culture, hearing the call to prayer at 5 a.m. and the architecture and everything about it was just very, very strange. The landscape, I remember the last day, we were there for about 10 days, and the last day of the event, we couldn't sail because a sandstorm came, and that was definitely a first for me. We've had either too much wind to race or not enough wind, but never a sandstorm. So it was just so different. I think the Indian Ocean trip was a great one because it was so far from home and such a different experience. That was pretty wild to be out on the water sailing for 17 days straight at a time with one other guy and be really reliant on our instincts and what we'd learned and our equipment and, you know, everything we had in front of us. We used to say that the boat and each other, that was our lives, because we had no support. We kept in touch with people on land. They knew where we were, and we had our satellite radio. But, you know, the boat was everything, and each other was everything. And, it was one of those teamwork situations that got us through and had a successful voyage. I think the third biggest experience for me was being a watch captain and being a leader on a transatlantic race a few years ago and having to sit my team down halfway through after we had lost one of our sails and basically a rope broke and the whole sail went in the water in the middle of the night and having to race up on deck and pull it out, having to sit the team down and say, hey, guys, I've got this funny feeling that if we keep pushing the boat this hard, and the equipment this hard, that we're not going to make it, that not only will we not do well and we won't finish this race, but, you know, we'll be stuck out here and we'll have to get essentially rescued. And I was able to persuade the guys that we needed to take a little more of a conservative approach. And, yeah, I wanted to race hard and I wanted to win this race, but we weren't going to make it for 2 weeks sailing straight at this pace. We had a few things break, and either the boat or the crew just wasn't going to make it across the finish line. So we had a tough talk that night in the middle of the night, and we argued, and it was a little bit of that conflict, you know, not necessarily teeth getting knocked out, but it was pretty back and forth. It was pretty heated. And eventually I was able to persuade everybody that we needed to scale it back a little bit and be a little more reasonable. And we ended up crossing the finish line 2 weeks later, 8 minutes ahead of the second place boat. We ended up winning the race, and it was that close, but we made it. We were all intact. The boat made it, and it was just a wonderful experience and one of my best, my most proudest moments as a sailor and as a leader and as a crewmate and a teammate.
Yeah, I mean, that just, sounds so interesting. And as you're talking about this race and, all the things that are going on and the fact that, it's this two-week race and you're out in the middle of the ocean and it's difference of 8 minutes, it's almost like, you almost can't comprehend it because in sports, a lot of times, you see a horse race and everything is within milliseconds and seconds and all these kinds of things. But to be doing your sport for 2 weeks, you're in your competition for two straight weeks and then have it be an eight-minute situation, I mean, that's pretty incredible. Because, sailing doesn't really obviously get a lot of play on ESPN or, Fox Sports or any of those kinds of things unless it's the America's Cup. And I think we all get kind of really, I know I've watched it, it's very compelling to watch the racing and to see the fact that you're constantly battling, the nature and the environment and all those kinds of things, and then to have what you were experiencing, that you have to also maintain that continuity within the team, I think really, really goes to show what a, high-level, high-intensity sport this is, because it's not like, the clock goes, the buzzer or whatever goes off at 8 p.m. and then you guys all shut it down, because you're still on that boat, you're still racing, there's still factors that are going to take place. So, really, really interesting, amazing stuff. And obviously, without going into the details, because we'd need 3 hours today, one of the things we know that we're learning with our the core performance program is, as athletes, we don't sometimes even take into account all the different influencers that are out there. And it sounds like with racing, I mean, you had the social aspect, you had the mental components, that environmental, I mean, have your sail, which is pretty critical when you're in a sailing race, be in the water. I'm sure that's not, not something everybody, wants to be experiencing. It's probably like losing a paddle if you're, or one of your oars if you're, doing rowing or something like that. So really, really interesting. And in all that, I mean, it sounds like, I think racing too, because it doesn't get enough of a play, enough of any kind of, following, I'm sure it was also very dangerous on a lot of levels. I mean, were there any like really kind of close calls or anything that you experienced that were sort of like, had you, take that moment where you had to step back and be like, oh my God, like I'm in a sport that literally at times can be life and death?
Yeah, I absolutely. And I think that's a big reason that I've adapted my lifestyle a little bit in the last couple of years to be more of a supportive role and a coach type role to athletes instead of being on the front lines. I think one incident in particular really hit home. I was racing in Antigua Race Week, which is a big event down in the Caribbean every April, and I had done a few of the regattas there over the last few years. And this one year in particular, I think it was 2 years ago, we were sailing. I was sailing on a 56-foot boat, which is a pretty good size, probably right about in the middle of all the sizes of yachts that are down there. And anyway, we were out sailing on a pretty windy day. It was probably about 25 or 30 knots sustained with big waves. And that's why everybody goes and races in the Caribbean, because it's just so fun and exciting. But anyway, we had a big puff of wind, and the boat went right on its side, and we broached, and one of the guys fell overboard, and it happened to be the son of the owner of the boat. And he went over the side of the boat and washed out the back, and we came back up, and the boat righted, and we were still kind of helpless because our sails and lines were a little confused. But anyway, we saw him wash out the back of the boat, and he went over a wave, and we saw him wave to us saying, yeah, guys, I'm okay, I'm not unconscious or anything, but, obviously I'm overboard, so come get me. And we saw him go over the second wave, and then that was it. He was gone, and we didn't see him go over the third wave, and we couldn't see beyond that because we were drifting downwind and down current. And we looked and got our sails under control and searched around and did all the procedure that you're supposed to do in a man overboard. And it was just one of the most helpless feelings I remember that I've ever had. And the biggest thing that hit me was looking around at my crewmates' faces, including this kid's father, and just everybody is just completely white as a ghost, saying, we've just lost somebody, and we're out here for fun, and it's just a day race. We're not in the middle of the ocean, but look what can happen. If you lose that focus and that attention for just a little minute, and we kind of fell apart there. It was quite an experience, and luckily one of the boats behind us was able to pick him up and bring him back to shore safely. But it was definitely a taste of all the stories you hear of people going to the back of the boat in the middle of the night to relieve themselves or whatever in an ocean race and falling over, and you just never find them. So it can happen, and there's traumatic injuries in sailing as well, like we saw in the America's Cup this past go around. And it's amazing, some of these big boats they move so fast, but that's because of all the physics and how much load is on certain parts of the boat. And when you pare things down so much for top performance, you lose a little durability. And sometimes when you're doing things that haven't been done, like a foiling trimaran, for example, you can cross that line and bad things can happen. So, for me, having a little dose of adventure and a little excitement once in a while is great, but I don't want to be responsible for something like that. And I certainly wouldn't want it to happen to me. I've got, too much going back on shore, and I'm just too excited by the potential of the program that we're learning and how valuable the core performance concepts are to give that up and to put it on the line too much in that way.
Well, I have to tell you, you had me on the edge of my seat with that story. I was getting goosebumps and the whole bit, and I was very relieved to hear that the boat behind you guys got him, because I was, I was, like I said, on the edge of my seat, and I just had the goosebumps going up and down my legs, because it was, pretty, you did a phenomenal job of that story. I mean, it was, like I said, it was just very, very compelling to know that that's a lot of what you faced. I mean, and again, I think a lot of times with a lot of the sports that obviously get the big play, we know that anything can happen at any time, but doing a sport such as yours, I mean, it's almost probably a very prevalent thing, because you've got other circumstances that you have very little control over, with the wind and the waves and the things like that. So I'm very relieved to hear that they were able to get him, but I can only imagine how that has you sort of reassess things and has you take that look, which you spoke to a little bit of, but so leading you into, making that look into a new direction, looking to do something else. So is that sort of what led you into finding, the life coaching, career coaching type thing? Like, how did you segue away from the racing into finding the life coaching IPAC program?
Well, I had numerous experiences like that, and a few times of just having been on the road for too much, too long, and kind of burning the candle at both ends. And I just realized that I wanted to do something a little more sustainable and practical. And when I look back at my varied path through school and work and sailing and travel and everything I'd done, and talking to other young people who were a few years behind me in that whole process, I just got the sense that there was so much that could be done for young people, and I was so interested in seeing what I could do to help in that process of growing up and maturing and learning all those lessons and balancing risks and rewards, and especially this day and age, there's so much opportunity out there. You can go anywhere, you can do anything, you can be anything if you put your mind to it. And I think for me, it's so near and dear to me to help other young people to see that power that they have and the ability to go anywhere and do anything that they dreamed of and even more, and not get hung up on the day-to-day and what people say you can and can't do and what hasn't been done before, because it's all out there and it's all for the taking. And if you can build a support team and a structure around yourself and find somebody who can hold your hand and hold your feet to the fire at the same time, you can really do whatever you want. It just takes a little bit of initiative and setting the right goals. And I think the program that we're doing is one of the early steps that's going to really help a lot of people, especially young people, sort through the barrage of information and what's going on out there, and to get to the heart and the core of what it takes to be fulfilled and satisfied and have that sense of adventure all at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, your experiences that you've had certainly are going to foster you into being able to relate to kids and the athletes on a lot of different levels, from the standpoint of, you know, working to prove yourself, learn the skill sets. Like you said, you got a late start in lacrosse, yet you didn't let that hold you back. And then before you know it, you're captain of your lacrosse team, and all the different intangibles that you've learned and just your experiences are definitely going to help, help athletes in that venture. Because I think sometimes some of the athletes, again, they get so caught up in just the skills and drills aspect, which is the part that I've seen too much of, that they forget about the intangibles, which are what really drives you towards success. As we've all seen and experienced in things, that sometimes the most physically gifted people aren't the ones who have the most success, because the physical side of it has just always come so easy. It's when you have you got to sometimes maybe work a little bit harder and push a little bit harder and try the different things and see what's going to work for you, that you tend to develop those skill sets that help you be more successful and off the field, because you see it all too often, unfortunately, in the pro levels, these athletes who have had a lot of success in their lives and have really been pushed through the system, and they make it to the pros, they get all this money in front of them, and then they don't know how to sort of like handle their lives. Or now all of a sudden they're not the fastest and the best one. And they start to struggle because they don't have some of the life skills and the tools to sort of help them outside of the physical side of their sport. So, again, from everything you've experienced, you're definitely going to be a valuable asset to anyone that works for you, for sure. And time is running out quickly, because it always does. I always find it. But I want to take a few minutes to have you just briefly let us know a little bit about your the prepared food business that you started with, the gluten-free, organic and gluten-free lasagna. Because as we were talking, I was on your website looking at it, and it looks very, very good. So just tell us a little bit about how that came about.
Yeah, that's been a fabulous project as well. We have always been a very close family, and family dinners have always been a top priority for us. And lasagna was it. Whenever we had company or a get-together or grandparents come to visit, that's what we always had for dinner. And it came to just be associated with very special experience. So that's just been a really tight bonding thing for us. And we got talking a couple of winters ago and said, what if we had a way to not only share this food, but this sense of a family dinner experience with people, with close community, and eating well and feeling good and being responsible all at the same time. So we founded this little company called Heart to Hearth, which stands for all of that, for family dinners and eating good food and knowing where it comes from and knowing where the money goes to pay for it, and being happy and healthy and responsible as well. So we've been selling our lasagna, the family recipe, in a gluten-free and all-organic version to stores all over Vermont. You get them in a little frozen package, you let it thaw, and you bake it out, and it's absolutely delicious. And so we've been doing that for about a year now, and we're just about to introduce our newest product, which is a gluten-free, all-organic biscotti, which is also just absolutely terrific. It's delicious, and it's just a fantastic product. So we're going to be kicking that off tomorrow at our first tasting at one of the local food co-ops here in Vermont, and then Sunday we have another one as well. And if folks want to get the details on that, those are on our website, hearttohearthvermont.com. And also this summer we're working with some student consultants from Middlebury College and the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth to help us figure out how to offer this food beyond Vermont to Southern Connecticut and the rest of New England. So very exciting, busy times, but it's a great theme, and we've got a lot of good energy behind it, and a lot of great people have been very supportive in helping us make this happen. So it's a very different thing on the surface from coaching and performance work that we do, but the theme of connection and having meaningful, fulfilling lives is under the surface, and that's really the theme behind the work that I'm doing in both projects.
And yes, and I know I was looking on your website, and as you were talking, we were talking the other day, you said that it's not quite, you haven't, and you've just mentioned it now, that right now there isn't a mail order. It's just being able to purchase at the various places that you can get it, which I know is on your website. You have all the places listed you can get it. So anybody that's at least in the New England area, I recommend, and even New York, recommend going to that website if you're interested, because, like I said, it does look very, very good. And hopefully soon you will get some of that work, that, you know, the procedures worked out as to how you can ship it, because I'm sure it's going to be that kind of thing that really could take off. So, like I said, it looks really good. I have some friends up in Vermont, so I'll have to try to make some arrangements with them to make that happen. But also on a little side note, as you were talking, it just reminded me that today's your birthday, so I want to wish you a happy birthday today. So you've got a lot of very, very exciting things going on. And if you wouldn't, just the last couple minutes we have here, just, you know, sort of maybe give us your, you know, last few words on just, you know, your experiences, or just everything you're looking to do is for you, what it means for you, where you're hoping to sort of take all this, and then again, how people can reach you.
Yeah, sure. Today being my 33rd birthday, and thank you for the kind wishes, it just is so striking to me, because my dad's birthday is yesterday, and he basically was, I was born on the day after his 33rd birthday. So it just,
oh, cool.
It just shows you how life is short and it goes fast, and you have kind of one shot at things, and you got to get out there and take some risks and ask for help when you need it, and have that sense of adventure. And when you feel like there's something out there that you could do, go for it. You know, fall in love, get your heart broken, strike out. You know, I used to strike out more than anyone on my little league team, but I loved playing baseball, and so I stuck with it and stuck with sports and always challenged myself. And so, you know, that's what's pushed me to get to where I am now, and what's going to help me down the road in the future. And I think doing things that are meaningful and valuable is always going to be at the core of my values, and I'm going to just take every opportunity to help other people do the same, both to eat well and live well and perform well. And by all means, if you're interested in trying our lasagna or our biscotti, or if you're interested in the Core Performance Dynamics program, we've got a lot of top-level athletes and young aspiring athletes who are interested in getting involved. And so we're gonna do our best and make these concepts and this this program available to everybody we can. But if you're interested in hearing more or trying it out, definitely log on to my website, hearttohearthvermont.com or powerscoaching.com, and send me an email or give me a call and let me know. We'll definitely get you a sample of our lasagna or the coaching program as well.
Well, it was great having you on here today, and learned a lot of interesting stuff, and I'm really looking forward to being able to meet you hopefully later this summer or early this fall as he's moving into Connecticut, as he did mention, down the southwestern part of the state. So I will be looking forward to being able to meet you live, because talking with you today was really, really great. A lot of great insight from what you've learned, you've experienced, and hopefully today our listeners, you know, learn some of that piece about taking chances and never settling and making sure that they're, you know, you're always pursuing and going after sort of that next goal, that next dream, and that, you know, nothing is short of what you're able to go after if you just go after it with conviction. Because that's what my takeaway would be from today and listening to everything that you've done, is you just sort of, you know, you went out there, you've tried stuff, you've done it with passion, you've done it with conviction, and no fear of failing. It was just about going out there for the experience and hey, let's give this a shot and hope it's gonna land upright. So again, I thank you for joining me here today. It was a great conversation. And like I said, look forward to meeting you in the future in person.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's been my pleasure to be on the show, and I look forward to meeting you in person as well, and continuing our journey through this sports performance program as well.
And yeah, so definitely down in the near future here. So I want to thank everyone for listening today. Time to wrap everything up, and I will be on. The next show will be June 6th at noon, and I look forward to everyone joining me again. And again, my information, my business is Inner Winning Coaching, but my website is coachmandy.com. You can email me at mandy@coachmandy. I'm also available on Facebook at Inner Winning Coaching, and also on Twitter at Life Coach Mandy. So again, thank you, Ben, for joining me, and thank you everyone for listening, and I will see you all back here on June 6th at noon. Take care, everyone.
Thanks, Mandy. Bye, everyone.